Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Mostly Mets podcast, where we talk mostly about the Mets. I'm Toby Hyde with Rob Brender. This week, an episode a little bit about the 86 Mets coming back for their 30th year reunion at Citi Field, and a little bit about the Mets who took 2-3 from the Washington Nationals, and specifically talking about the rotation. So, Rob, how are you?
I'm good. I spent the last, 3 days with the Mets in Washington, which was, you know, a pleasant series, I thought, for the Mets overall. Obviously, we have the bad Harvey news, and we're going to get into that. Trust me. But as a whole, to go in there and take 2 out of 3, and with the performance of Steven Matz yesterday and Bartolo Colon in the opener of that series, I thought overall a very positive sign for the Mets.
We will get there, but be sure to check out the Mets blog Q&A cast this week. Matt Cerrone chats one-on-one with former Mets radio play-by-play voice Gary Thorne to talk all about the 1986 Mets. We're celebrating their 30th anniversary at Citi Field this weekend. They also talk about Gary's memories of working with Bob Murphy and Ralph Kiner. Definitely give it a listen. I got to say, personally, I can't get enough of the old Bob Murphy and Ralph Kiner stories, too. Those are fun.
Yes, they are a lot of fun. I agree.
So 86 and 86 celebration this weekend. If you haven't got your tickets to Citi Field, go. There's stuff Saturday. There's a giveaway on Sunday. But this is it's always funny for me, and I show my age here, and it, because of my age, which is I was born in 82. Okay, so you can do the math about how old I am. Mm-hmm. So my first real sentient years with the Mets were 87 and 88, and I didn't go to a game until 88.
I'm sorry for you, I want to say.
Right, so I've spent a lot of time with that 86 Mets championship video. I can't tell you the number of hours me and my buddies have watched that 86 championship video mm-hmm. in various states of consciousness. But that's like my exposure to the team and all the stories and all the video and the pictures around what used to be Shea and now Citi Field.
Right, okay.
So it's weird. So so I get to speak. So I'll play the young guy here. It's like this is the nostalgia piece that I'm just a shade too young for.
Understood. And I think it's the same way for any Met fan that's your age or younger, right?
Right.
I think
absolutely.
The majority of diehards probably have that same exact experience where they don't know the 86 team except for from that video or from maybe actually listening to some of those games in replay, which, oh, by the way, WOR is going to replay game 6, I believe, sometime this weekend, too. So that's their version of the celebration. I can tell you I was 8. During the 1986 World Series. My first memories of baseball are the big Dykstra home run from the NLCS. It's the first thing I remember watching. I don't remember the actual total game from those years, but I can tell you I do remember hearing about that home run. I remember seeing that home run on TV, and I remember my dad talking about it. But I was also, I think, a little bit too young to really appreciate what the Mets had accomplished. And I probably, although it's hard for me to remember now, I can remember thinking at least a little bit at the time that this must be something that happens all the time for the New York Mets. They must win all the time. Oh, no, they haven't won since. But hopefully they can get back to those glory type years. That was a lot of fun. That team, you know, there's so much special stuff about that team, Toby. The pitching staff was incredible. And Gary Carter, of course, a Hall of Famer and the clutch hits in that World Series. I would argue, Toby, that that postseason as a whole, the ALCS was fantastic with the Red Sox and Angels, the NLCS with the Mets and Astros, and then that World Series going 7 games. I would argue that that's maybe the best postseason of all time.
That's one I would to discuss. I would like to do a little more research. It was a great postseason, of course.
Fantastic postseason and the drama. People talk about 86 Game 6, and rightly so. That was an amazing comeback, maybe the best of all time also. But Game 7 was fantastic too. People forget the Mets were down, I believe, 3-0 in that game before they wound up getting a big hit from Keith Hernandez and they wound up ultimately scoring the tying run. Then they get some home runs late, Darryl Strawberry, Ray Knight. The whole series was just so dramatic and so much fun.
It was Keith who said about his at-bat in Game 6, you know, I wasn't going to make an out make one of the last outs.
Right, right.
And he just, and I'm going to, this comes from someone who's watched the video, not stuff the live, but you can see it in those at-bats. Keith just refused to make outs late in those games.
Yeah, he didn't have a very good World Series. He was, you know, aside from Carter, you can argue he was the best hitter on that team. Maybe the best Darryl. Overall. Darryl was a great hitter. There were so many good hitters on that team. So to say who was the best, I don't know. But, you know, Keith did not – he was a key member of that offense, obviously, and he did not have a very good World Series as a whole.
Right. Didn't he single in front of – or he was on base before Knight scored, wasn't he?
No. You're talking about in the comeback?
Yeah.
In game six, no, he was not on base. It was Mitchell that was a part of that. And who else? It's hard for me to remember now. But no, he was not one of the guys that scored.
So, but, and then the funny thing is what you said is like, you know, you felt like the Mets were going to do that every year. And they went to the playoffs in 88. But that team fizzled in sort of under the weight of its own glamour, maybe. I mean, like, maybe they were that star that burned so brightly they just burned themselves out. They couldn't sustain it.
Well,
and the players' injuries and the players all point to management, and of course the Darryl trade and Doc's, you know, struggles with drugs, et cetera. But like that team was so good, it was such a team of the moment, but it couldn't sustain itself, which is really interesting to me. But it was so dominant in that regular season. But it doesn't feel like teams are built that way anymore.
Well,
where they rampage through the regular season like that. And again, the playoffs, as you point out, a lot of ups and a lot of downs, and the Mets narrowly won this World Series. It wasn't like it was a romp through the playoffs. But
they barely got to the World Series. The Astros nearly took them out. And
exactly, yeah.
One thing worth remembering also about that team is Frank Cashin did such an unbelievable job putting that roster together. I don't know the exact percentage, but I'd say 80% of that team, maybe even 90% of that team, at least the guys that really contributed heavily, came via trade. They were all trade pieces, not necessarily in 86, but over the 3 or 4 year period leading up to the 86 season. Cashin's the one that put that all together.
Sure, Carter and Hernandez.
Carter Hernandez, Ron Darling was a trade guy. Sid Fernandez was a trade guy. Jesse Orosco was a trade guy. I mean, you can go on and on down the line. There's so many guys on that team that came via trade.
Rafael Santana.
I mean, all of them, really. Essentially, all the big pieces. Ray Knight was another one that came over. I mean, there's just a ton. So,
who's coming back, by the way?
Yeah, and that's great to see. I'm actually really looking forward to that, to seeing the whole group together. And I actually saw Ray Knight over the weekend. He was in Washington. He does pregame, postgame for the Nats. So, again, I have so many memories of that 86 team, and I think we've just gone over the big ones. But, you know, there are things during the regular season that stand out, too. All the fights that team would get into. They were a crazy bunch. Oh, and by the way, we should mention Len Dykstra is also coming back, since I'm talking about fights and things like that. It'd be great to see Lenny.
I wonder what condition Lenny will be. I mean, Len Dykstra has had such a tortured life after baseball. It's been bad.
Yeah, it's not good at all. But he's on Twitter now. You should follow him. It's quite entertaining.
Mets fans were heckling Ray Knight because you know how they do the postgame for Masson, just beyond the left field corner, and there are a lot of Mets fans sitting in the outfield the last couple nights in D.C. So Met fans were gently giving Ray Knight the business, or not so gently.
Well, I'm sure he loves that.
Yeah. Hmm. So anyway, nice to see him come back, even though he does work for the Nationals these days.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, the whole group together would be fantastic.
And Howard Johnson. All right, let's talk 2016 Mets rotation. And we're going to go sort of bad to good. And the bad is the big story of the week. Matt Harvey did not have a good night on Tuesday night against the Nationals. This is past a full quarter of the season, and he's not the same guy he's been. And so the question now is not so much, I think, what's going on with Harvey, although we can talk about that depending on how much you'd like. But I think it's got to inform the what's next for Harvey.
Is he staying in the rotation? That's what's next for Harvey. There really is no other conversation in regard to that. I mean, that's it. The Mets have decided that he would be benefited more by staying in the rotation and working himself through it because, in their words, they saw positive signs in that last start. They thought the velocity being up early was a good sign. They thought there was some sharpness with the breaking ball they hadn't seen. And that it's a little unfortunate that his last three starts have been one in Colorado and then the next two against the Nationals, a very good hitting team, in their opinion. So, you know, that's the way they're going to work through this. And I know a lot of Met fans don't like that. A lot of fans think that that's the wrong thing to do. But I trust Sandy, you know, that at least he's making the call that he thinks is going to benefit the team in the long run.
So the he gave up the back-to-back home runs that were really the big turning point in that start. That's where I was going with that. He gave them up on changeups. And it's hard to kill a guy for throwing his third pitch because as a starter, you've got to use all your pitches, right? If he had thrown 10 straight fastballs in a row, we'd kill him for that too, right? know, where's the slider? Where's the changeup? So, but I think it is glaring that he got beat twice on his third pitch. And and it was similar looking mistakes.
Yeah, and
they were just sort of up and flat.
I don't understand why he threw them to begin with. And I understand, you know, again, like you just said, mixing up your pitches and throwing your changeup occasionally, that's fine. But he had really dominated with the fastball and the slider in that game, at least up until that point. Yes, it was still very early in the game. But I would have just stuck with what was working, especially since you've been struggling so badly. Why try to just mix in a couple of random changeups? And then after you throw such a bad one to Zimmerman, why then go back with another one to Rendon, the next hitter? I didn't understand the pitch selection. I don't know if you put that on Harvey or if you put it on Plawecki or if you put it on the bench. Maybe they were calling pitches.
Probably not the bench if you want to absolve someone. And, you know, Plawecki puts his fingers down, and Harvey's got the ultimate control there.
Correct.
Right. I mean, he's the guy who both has the final nod and, more importantly, the final execution, right? That's the old Greg Maddux. I think it's the Greg Maddux line. I'm about to attribute it to Greg Maddux, even if it's not him, right? There is no such thing as a bad pitch as much as a poorly executed pitch.
Right.
Right. Okay. So in theory, you can choose any pitch in any spot as long as you execute it.
Yeah, makes sense.
And I'm reminded of that with respect to Harvey, but it's so distinctly his third pitch, if not fourth pitch.
Mm-hmm. Understood. I don't understand using it in that case. It's early. Why do you have to mix it in then?
Well, it's not that early. It was the fourth or fifth inning.
No. It was earlier than that. I think it was the third inning, wasn't it? When he gave up the back-to-back? Am I wrong? Was it the fourth? I don't have the scorecard in front of me.
Pretty sure.
Well, that's still relatively early.
Well, here's my suggestion, which is Harvey, when you look at times through the batting order, has been okay the first one. He's been a little bit worse the second time through the order, and just a train wreck in the third time through the order.
Yeah, a train wreck might not even cover it. It's so bad.
Dumpster fire. I mean, pick your metaphor there.
Correct. Yeah.
So here's my point, which is that the first time through the order, strikeout to walk ratio above four, guys are hitting 241 against him with a 292 on base percentage and just two home runs. Mm-hmm. And it's the second time things get a little bad. They're hitting over 300 against him, slugging 518. Okay. That's not good at all. And then the third time things go to crap with a 13 something OPS against. That's brutal. So here's my theory, is that he's actually been okay the first time through. Does it make sense to put him in the bullpen? And I threw this out to my friends and they all rejected it. But that's where he's had success. And if the goal is the major league team having success, Matt Harvey has had success first time through the order. Is this not a case where he might be, you know, in lieu of sending him down, is he more valuable to the Mets as a single time through the order guy right now?
I almost don't know how to react to that. I mean, my initial thought was there's just no way that'll ever happen. But if you want to get into should it happen, you know, just in theory.
Yes. Yeah, I'm asking a should question here.
I guess that makes sense. Really, my response to that, I guess, should be, why do you absolutely have to at this point in the season where it's still semi-early, you're just 2 months in now, and you have so much time and you have other starters who are performing, why do you have to keep him at the big league level right now? Is it because of you're worried about embarrassing him by sending him down? I mean, and I'm not even suggesting sending him down to AA or AAA, but why not even just extend it where, as we talked about a few weeks ago when we did our Harvey show, why not just throw him in extended games where nobody's around except maybe a couple of cameras that'll go down there to film it and just let him throw there without any fans and work himself out that way? I don't see how putting him in the bullpen helps him, you know? And I think, in other words, that doesn't help the Mets in the long term either.
Well, here's why it would help him. If the idea is that he would benefit from the consistency of working with Dan Worthen, and I know there are different Met fans who have different opinions of Dan Worthen, but I think in the ultimate accounting, Worthen has done a pretty good job with this staff, right? You look at, there are a lot of guys who've got better under his watch, if not everybody in this rotation, except for Harvey's disaster of 2016. You with me here? I mean, Bartolo's Bartolo, so he's.
I think Dan Worthen's done a great job. I'm with you.
So, okay, he's done fine. So I guess the idea would be if Harvey would benefit from consistency with respect to his pitching coach, being around Dan Worthen and not having to hear a different voice. You're not down with that.
No, I just don't think that matters all that much, to be honest with you. That's just my opinion. I understand where you're going with it.
And I'm look, there are and there are other terrific pitching coaches out there. He'd be, you know, and he'd be working with good people in St. Lucie. But it's just a thought. And there is a tradition of guys going down and working things out, from Cliff Lee to Roy Halladay. The minors is not an unprecedented thing. So you're on the minors program, not the bullpen program.
I'm not on the minors program. I'm on the extended spring, put him on the DL, let him rehab type program and get it together that way. I'm not on the throwing him in a double leg game in Binghamton. No, I don't think that's the way to do it. And one more thing, just before we move on to another subject, which I know we want to do here, I could care less about him speaking to the media after the game. It's just maybe because I didn't need an interview from him specifically, and it's not my job. I guess I understand it from their perspective, but the idea that he needs to get just destroyed, reamed by the media the next day, I thought it was, you know, I read the columns. I thought they were kind of, you know, a little sad, you know.
I agree. There's a lot of pissiness from the media about that, but that is a terrible look for a guy who, you know, thinks he's a face of a franchise.
I guess.
Can't do that. He's got to sit there and face the music. He's not good at it. The problem is he's not good at it. But he has to be there and he has to be accountable. I can't let him off the hook on that. That's a good point. David Wright called him out on it. He's got to go there. He's got to talk.
Should he have? Okay.
Absolutely.
I'm okay with it one way or the other. He doesn't have
but it looks really bad if he ducks it.
Does it look bad? Sure, it looks bad. I agree with you there. It absolutely looked bad. But ultimately, does it really matter?
Yes,
they're going to get the same exact quote that they're going to get the next day. And this idea that they have to answer questions for him, I think, is ridiculous. They don't have to answer questions for him. What questions were they going to get that he wasn't going to get anyway?
Other sports have mandated media availability. Baseball doesn't. Guys and especially starting pitchers can hang out in the training room. That is a bad deal for a guy who wants to be a superstar.
I guess.
That is inexcusable stuff. And then it becomes a story that he didn't talk.
What if he doesn't care about being a superstar? What if speaking to the media doesn't matter to him?
It's poor. It's lousy leadership, and it reflects very poorly on himself.
I just
inexcusable stuff. I'm shocked that you're willing to absolve him of that.
Yeah, I can care less. I can care less about reading a quote that I struggled. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, but he's got to say that.
But why?
All right, let's move on. Jacob DeGrom, second most disappointing Met. Different level as Harvey though.
Yeah.
How the strikeouts still aren't there. Velocity's wavering. Last start wasn't great.
Nope.
So
I'm much, much, much more worried about him than I am Matt Harvey, to be honest with you. Wow. Much more. Yeah, I am. I'm concerned about him physically. Okay. I just don't know what's going on with the velo. And I know everyone says, the velo's overblown. It's not overblown. When a guy's 2 to 3 miles an hour down on all of his pitches, there's a big issue. And he threw a ton of innings last year, just like Harvey did. And I'm really concerned that there's something going on there physically where he just can't ramp it up. Now, I will say this. The fact that he got off to such a slow start because of what happened in spring training, and then he had the baby thing, and so he didn't have as many starts early in the season. But now you're at the point where how many starts does he have, Toby? Do you have his numbers in front of you?
Seven starts.
Okay, seven starts is a pretty decent chunk, and he still has not looked good up until seven starts. And I don't know, maybe it's the same issue as Harvey. Maybe it's just overuse from the year before, and it's going to take some time. And I'm concerned that they might have to also shut him down at some point during the middle of this season and give him a 2 to 3 week break.
Look, he's not the same pitcher.
He's not.
The strikeout rate is way down. Strikeout to walk rate, not perfect, but it's a fine summary. Last year he was at 5.4. This year it's basically half that, 2.7. He's not the same kind of pitcher in terms of effectiveness.
No.
But I'm shocked to hear you say that you're more worried about DeGrom than Harvey. Harvey has been ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas DeGrom has been a different pitcher, but he has still helped the team. Harvey's got an ERA over 6. You know, I have more faith in DeGrom's, frankly, his feel for the baseball and his ability to work through things. You know, and if he has to be this slightly less dominant guy, okay. And it was such a flash in the pan. He came along so late. And maybe this is unfairly sort of hewing to pedigree where Harvey was the first rounder and DeGrom was the, you know, converted shortstop and ninth rounder. And DeGrom just sort of seemed like a magical surprise.
I guess.
Maybe I'm holding on to that. you know, his emergence as an ace is crazy.
Right, it is.
And Harvey was basically drafted to be an ace.
My biggest concern, though, Toby, is that it's a physical thing with him. And the Mets have said over and over and over again that Harvey is 100% healthy. I have to take them for their word on that. Otherwise, I just can't imagine they would continue to throw him. Now, probably the same theory applies to DeGrom, too, that why would they put him out there if they thought there was anything physically wrong with him? But, you know, I'm concerned. I'm concerned that there's something going on there physically. And whereas Harvey, I think it's either a mental or mechanical thing. With DeGrom, I think that there's really something wrong because his mechanics look the same to me.
Yeah, look, I'm not arguing you shouldn't be concerned about DeGrom. I just think it's a little crazy to say that your level there is as high as, or higher than Harvey's.
Yeah, well, all right.
But we'll agree to disagree, I think. But and you're right, maybe the shoulder's not quite right. You know, and he's a guy who doesn't want, you know, we've talked about this too. You know, he didn't get the big signing bonus. He's not as, you know, so you get the $4 million signing bonus or whatever Harvey got a couple years ago. You know, you're pretty comfortable. DeGrom didn't get that, and I'm not saying big leaguers are poor, but he's not one of these guys who's already sort of set up for life by the time he gets to the big leagues.
Yeah.
He can't – he doesn't want to afford to miss time. There's a lot of that going on here.
I guess. But, I mean, he already has missed some this year, but right. I'm sure he doesn't want to miss any more. I don't know. Again, I'm at the point now where I think there's certainly reason to be concerned about both of them, a lot of reason to be concerned. And it's only because this rotation is so deep with talent that the Mets are fortunate to be, I think, where they are right now.
Yeah, and we'll get there. We're kind of going bad to good through the Mets rotation. And so we move on from DeGrom. And look, I agree with you. There's reason to be concerned, but I just don't think it's the same level as Harvey.
Okay.
So Bartolo Colon, has he met your expectations? He's basically met mine. He's Bartolo'd. He's Bartolo'd through the year. There's been some good, some bad. He showed up big on Monday night in Washington, and for that, we could all give him, you know, Bartolo hugs, and he hit a home run. So for that, we could give him more Bartolo hugs. So, you know, Bartolo's Bartolo'd, right?
Yeah.
He's been the good mascot.
And he was great, as I said, at the Open or during our Open in the first game of this three-game series against Washington. He was really good. After a little bit of an early struggle, I think he walked one, maybe even gave up a hit in the first inning, and then rebounded to just dominate the Nationals, who are going through their own issues right now with their offense and Bryce Harper. But I thought Bartolo was fantastic that day. I trust that Bartolo probably 75% of the time is going to give you a good enough start to give you a chance to win. And that's all you can ask out of a number five starter. If he's your number five right now, some would argue Matt Harvey is the number five.
But right, which is problematic.
It is problematic, absolutely. But I think Bartolo's been fantastic. Yes, I agree with that.
I said it last week. I'm ready for Zach Wheeler, and it pains me to say it because you know he's going to throw 90 pitches through five innings, and there are going to be games when I'm sitting there in July going, "Oh my God, I can't believe I wished for this."
Well, but who knows? You never know. He's not going to be any kind of pitch, you know, reins. They're going to let him go the rest of the year. He's going to hopefully have good stuff. He's what, a year and a half removed from Tommy John and such, so maybe he'll be great.
So we passed from concerning to fantastic. And you and I actually had a little fight about this. And for here, our second on the list of the five is Steven Matz, who again was tremendous on Wednesday afternoon in D.C., leading the Mets to a win, a shutout win no less. He had that one hiccup early in April in his first start of the year, and since then he's been terrific. So there's not much else you say here, right? I mean, the fastball's been great. He got calls up in the zone on Wednesday in Washington. And if you give Steven Matz that high strike, that high fastball, he is untouchable because he will work up there.
Yeah.
And he will challenge guys up there in a way that you don't see. And frankly, Harvey doesn't, among other guys. He's very comfortable at the top of the zone. And when you give Steven Matz the top of the zone, as I forgot the name of the guy. I want to say Eddings, but I don't think that's right. When you give Matz the top of the zone, it's curtains.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And as you said, he did work up, he worked in, he worked out, he had the great fastball going. He was consistently 94 to 96 most of the game. He mixed in the good curveball, he threw a good changeup, he actually threw a slider a few times. I thought he was fantastic.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you just don't see that many people starting their career winning as many games as he is. I mean, this guy is dominating. And aside from that first start of the year where he kind of blew up a little bit, he was just wonderful, really, since that point.
Yeah, the win statistic is a little silly. I know Josh Lewin likes to talk about it, about Matz's win numbers versus Harvey's. Harvey's, what, 2 games over .500 for his career, and Matz is like 10-1 or something stupid. But wins are sort of silly. But the other thing I was going to point about Matz is that he was throwing changeups to lefties. He got Daniel Murphy on a changeup, among others. Love the lefty-on-lefty changeup. Guys don't do it enough. There's no reason not to. And Matz just will throw any pitch to any guy, and I love it.
Yeah, he's not afraid. That's for sure. He is – he's like Noah in that regard, isn't he? Where they just kind of go out there. They know their stuff is so good that if they throw it with precision like they normally have been, then nobody can hit it. And I love that about those two starters, you know, together. I brought this up yesterday, Toby. Is there a better 1-2 punch right now that you can argue is better, 100% better, or noticeably better than that duo right now, Syndergaard and Matz? I mean, you can say baseball? That – I mean, in baseball right now – and some people said, Bumgarner, Cueto.
Because who's Kershaw's – the obvious response rebuttal would be to start with Kershaw.
Kershaw and anybody, right.
But who's Robin to Kershaw's Batman?
There really isn't anybody. Kenta Maeda, you can say. Right. But he's been awful in May, really, really bad in May. It's 6.3 ERA in May.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a select few number of guys will take over Thor. And so I guess we'll transition now to Thor. And so you and I went back about this, about sort of whether on the most pleasant surprise list – Thor is number one or Matz is number one. And I just think as good as Noah Syndergaard has been, he hasn't had that disaster as like Matz did in his opener, although he's had one rough start, really.
Yeah.
He's just been so darn good.
Yeah.
And it just feels like every time he goes out there, he could throw a shutout. He could go 7-8 shutout innings. And Matz missed a start or two for health. So, I mean, it's pretty close, but I do think Syndergaard has edged ahead of it and has been, you know, every time he takes the mound, every Thursday is a good day.
Yeah. And he's been maybe the most dominating pitcher in baseball this year. What's his ERA now? 1.8 something? 1.9?
Is that good?
I don't know. They tell me it's good. I think it's good. It seems good. He's amazing. He's amazing. I can't wait to watch him pitch. It is must see TV every single time he's on the mound. You know, there's nobody I'd rather watch right now, maybe other than Kershaw. And I think he's up there with Kershaw, too.
Right. And so, you know, Matz, you just can't quite put in that level of conversation yet.
Maybe not yet, but he's there. He's close, on the brink. But, you know, Noah, there's just something about watching a guy throwing 100 miles an hour all game long, which isn't to say that Matz's 95 isn't fun, because it is. But something about 100 is amazing.
If you go wins above replacement, it goes Kershaw, Arrieta, Syndergaard, and then Piscotty and Fowler, and then Arenado.
Piscotty been? My goodness, that's another.
So, you know, Syndergaard, I think rightly is on the pleasant, you know, most pleasant, most awesome surprises.
Yeah,
and that's real quick and dirty. But that's
I have to bring something up. I know we're talking Mets and we're talking pitchers, but since you mentioned Stephen Piscotty, I have to bring this up because I heard it this week. Piscotty said that he worked on his throwing from the outfield with help from Mike Leake, that he asked a pitcher, how do I throw from the outfield? Not maybe how do I throw, that's probably the wrong way to put it, but can you help me with my throwing? I had never heard any outfielder talk about that before. I just thought it was worth mentioning because it was a really cool, unique thing.
I like it. And isn't Leake – I mean, Leake must have played a position pretty late. I don't know the story, but he was a really good hitting pitcher too. I don't know. Did Leake – play a position, play outfield in college or something, even as late as college?
It wasn't because of that, though. It was because Piscotty was trying to figure out why are the balls I'm throwing from the outfield sinking so much or cutting. And so he asked Mike Leake, how should I throw in terms of my arm positioning and the grip on the baseball if I can to get a nice straight throw to the infield?
Oh, okay.
And that's why they were working on it, yeah.
How do I throw a four-seam fastball, basically?
Basically, yeah. So I thought that was kind of cool. Anyway.
So, you know, what else do we have to say about Syndergaard? I mean, he didn't face the Nationals this week, which is too bad because, you know, but then the good news is we've got Thursdays coming up.
Yes.
So, you know, some saving grace.
And the Dodgers come into town. It's a big series. And Julio Urias is going to pitch for LA on Friday. The rookie who's 19 years old, his first big league start. So that'll be kind of fun. And then you have the 86 stuff going on. The Mets are on a roll. They've won 5 out of 6. So, and they're a half game out of first place right now as we record today. So
let's talk about the Mets Nationals for a moment here. Cause that's a big series real quick. I was there Monday as fan. I think you were covering the games, all three games, or was it just the first two?
No, it was all three, yeah.
So now, could you hear us from the left field corner? Were you sitting in the press box on Monday night? Could you hear us?
No.
That's a shame. It was a little soggy. We were wet.
I heard the seven line crew on Saturday. Or no, I'm sorry, Tuesday?
Tuesday. Yeah, there was more of them. It was better. It was a nicer weather night.
Yeah, there was a group
of DC Mets fans that were there Monday, and certainly seven line rolled in on Tuesday.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah.
And then Wednesday for the day game.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Good times. The whole series was fantastic.
And for all the angst, right? For all the angst around Harvey, Mets took 2 of 3. They're within a game of the Nationals. Things are just fine. We keep coming back to this.
Yeah. No, I think everyone is kind of overreacting about the negative, because look where this team is. Now, the one thing I will say is they need some help.
Well, expectations are so much higher for this team.
Right. They do need some help, because Lucas Duda is going to be gone now for a little while.
Yeah.
Could be a long while. And the bottom of that lineup, Toby, oh my goodness. Whether it's Eric Campbell, Ty Kelly, two guys that don't belong in the big leagues, they need a guy who can fill in and play first base that's an actual big leaguer.
Hi, Wilmer Flores called. No, and
yeah, he'll be back. Yeah. That'll help.
Right. So, no, you're absolutely right. The bottom of the order is not good. We could do a whole bottom of the order show. Maybe that's next week and we'll scare everybody off.
God,
right?
I hope not, because that means they haven't done anything and Wilmer's not back. But yeah.
So, coming up next week, the bottom of the order show.
Good idea. There you go.
All right. Don't forget, we've made it easier for you to listen to all SNY.TV's original podcasts. If you're a fan of the Mets, Jets, Knicks, Rangers, Islanders, college basketball, and recruiting, you can subscribe to the SNY.TV audio network on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's the SNY.TV audio network. And please make sure to rate and review the channel. We'll try to be better next week, so we're Mets. For Rob, I'm Toby. This has been the Mostly Mets Podcast. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been the Mostly Mets Podcast, part of the SNY.TV Audio Network.